I'm Kirk Harnack. On This Week in Radio Tech, Greg Oganowski is back. He joins Chris Tobin, Tom Ray, and me for a tutorial on HEAAC and more digital audio info on This Week in Radio Tech, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 116, recorded February 15th, 2012. Decoding HEAAC. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Telos Systems and the Telos HX1 and HX2 POTS telephone hybrids. Check them out on the web at telos-systems.com/HX. It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. Hi there, I'm Kirk Harnack. Glad that you're along with us. You've tuned into the right show where we talk about audio technology. You know, that used to include a lot of analog stuff and sometimes we talk about transmitters, AM and FM stuff, and how we get audio through the air, whether it's analog or even digital technologies. But on this show, we're going to talk to you about coding technologies and how to get great audio across the minimum amount of bandwidth and do it in a way that is correct, that results in good audio at the other end of it. Let me introduce you to our co-stars of the show. First of all, from the Hudson Valley of New York, it's my friend and yours, Tom Ray. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very good, except I need some more memory. Anyway, greetings. It's a little chilly up here tonight. I'm sitting here in the ham shack and checking email and doing a whole bunch of other things while we're chatting. And anyway, I'm VP of Engineering at Buckley Broadcasting, WOR Radio, New York City.
Good deal. Tom, glad to have you with us. I know you guys do some streaming, so you'll probably have some questions for Greg about some of the inner workings of what he'll be talking about. Also with us, the best-dressed engineer in radio that ever was, from Manhattan, New York, it's Chris Tobin. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Tom. Things are doing well here. It's been a great day. I'm with the folks at CCS Musicam, a audio and video codec manufacturing company, so for disclosure for this evening and other evenings that we have. How are things?
Good. Very well. Very well. And I know you're very familiar with some streaming technologies, but I'm always excited to have this guest on our show. And we're not going to go through a bunch of topical stuff because last time it seems like we just didn't have enough time for Greg to teach us all the things he wants to teach us. Greg has been studying, been excited about, and been passionate about audio streaming for years now. I remember, years ago at a podcast convention, I ran into Greg Oganowski, and he showed me some dinky little cell phone, and he punched a couple buttons, says, listen to this. This is, and Greg, what was it? Was it KFI streaming across the internet? Or I don't remember what it was, but it was impressive, whatever you had.
It may have been KFI. I remember running into Leo Laporte at... When he was doing a show down here in L.A. Several years ago, he would occasionally go out to there was a computer fair that would happen in Pomona. Mm-hmm. And we went out there one day. And this sort of an interesting little story. This is before HD radio had really kicked in yet. And Kiss FM had their HD up. It wasn't really public. So I called my friend Terry Grieger over there, and I said, Terry, could you patch KFI's audio into KISS's HD? So then I had a private STL to get Hi-Fi KFI over here, and I threw that on our streaming encoder, and I went out to the Pomona Fairgrounds and showed Leo Laporte streaming on a little flip phone. And it was back in the day when you didn't need an app. All you did was punched in a URL and away you were going. We showed how to do this back in 2003, and there were no takers. There were absolutely no takers on any of this technology. I took it around to several of the radio stations here in L.A. Everybody told me it was the greatest thing they'd ever heard, the way it sounded and whatnot. They asked me what I was going to do with it, and I said, well, you know, that's a funny thing. I said, it's not what I'm going to do with it. It's what you're going to do with it. It's very strange. I mean, the the streaming thing didn't kick in until this device right here, the very device, it's an iPhone, the very device that that shipped with no streaming player is the one that kicked it all off. Go figure.
Huh.
You know, I mean, it might as well have been one of these, if anybody remembers one of these.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a
what
classic.
Is this?
This is the Panasonic Tootaloop. It's a hoop inside a loop. I actually have the original commercial for this. It'd be fun to play it, but we probably don't have time for that.
Now,
so,
in any regard,
go ahead.
Is that Wi-Fi? How does that thing work?
This uses one of those things called a loop stick. I didn't say lipstick. A loop stick. Does anybody remember what a loop stick is? Tom, I know you do.
Oh, it's a great way to make an AM antenna in a little tiny space.
Look at here, right here on your dial.
Wow, not even with FM. I love it.
See that? Yeah, no, it's AM only. And
wow.
If you notice here, I've got, in memory of the Big 8, we've got it right there on CKLW.
2020 News.
My goodness.
There you go.
Yeah. That had to be from the early 70s?
This thing was early 70s, yes, indeed. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was very strange. I had heard the commercial on an old CKLW air chuck, and then I got involved with an archival project. It's something that I sometimes do when I have to make some free time to go do something that's fun for a change. But a friend of mine, his name is Ron Hicklin. And just in case anybody doesn't know who Ron Hicklin is, Ron Hicklin of the famed Ron Hicklin Singers. And you probably still don't know who he is because he never got credits on any of the music or any of the songs or any of the jingles that these people ever did. But if you had a great big agency and you were doing big agency work for small companies like McDonald's or Panasonic, or Yamaha or Suzuki, you called Ron Hicklin. And he was your guy. The Ron Hicklin Singers were also the singers behind such great acts as the Partridge Family. They did all that stuff along with the Wrecking Crew. But Ron never archived any of that stuff. And we recently did a huge digitization project for him. And, you know, let me just pull something up here on my phone real quick, because I think everybody probably remembers this. Let me try to make this quick. Let's see. It's got to be in here. No, it's not.
Hey, I just want to interrupt for a second. Hey, folks who are listening or watching, we know that there's a little audio problem from Greg Oganowski, and it has to do entirely with Skype. When Skype pops into its HD mode, it adds this bit of noise to the mic he's using, and we troubleshot this for a good 20 minutes before the show, and all we were able to come up with is that whenever Greg's in HD mode, and no control over that, Skype does it automatically, HD, SD, just depending on which way the wind blows or the bandwidth available, but in HD mode, his mic makes that bit of noise, and we don't know why.
Yeah, and I do notice that I did just manage to pop into HD here, so I'm sure that noise has shown up. I apologize for that. But we can thank the fine developers at Skype for traditionally releasing software before its time. Apparently, software developers think software should be like bad wine. Always release before its time. I can't find that Panasonic commercial, I don't think. Yeah, so whatever. But I was also going to, if anybody remembers Kawasaki Lets the Good Times Roll, that was all Ron Hicklin's work.
Sure.
When I went, long story short, we really got off track here. But for some trivia here.
Back to the streaming.
I was going back into some of the archives, and lo and behold, I found the original commercial for this damn thing that I had when I worked at W4 many years ago. I don't know, for whatever reason, I threw the thing in there, and if anybody wants it, I'd be more than happy to give it to you. It's kind of cool. Trip down memory lane. So,
well, cool.
In any regard, enough of the past, I guess. We're sort of moving forward. And
Greg, it seems like last show we actually spent a good amount of time going through some history and getting up toward where we are now. Why don't we kind of start at where we are now, or wherever you'd like to, if you got a story to tell, but where we are now and where stations who or anybody who produces content that wants to stream, where they ought to be, what considerations do they need to have in mind when they're wanting to figure out their streaming strategy and what codec and bit rates and providers and, you know, how they want to get listeners to hear them in the most friction-free kind of way.
You know, for whatever reason, Kirk, your video has disappeared from me. I see myself here because apparently the video switcher just moved over to me, but for some reason or another, you had disappeared, and I'm looking at a bit meter, and I didn't see any traffic on the inbound, but it looks like it's working now. So I just thought I would alert anyone to that potential problem.
That was actually intentional.
I see what's coming and going because I've got a bit meter both ways running. In any regard, could you restate that question? Because I really got distracted by the fact that I thought we were just going to get
By the way, the chat room has postulated that the interesting mic sound whenever you go into HD could be caused by some USB bandwidth contention if both the mic and the camera end up operating through the same USB port. Any thoughts about
that? That is entirely possible. But there's not a whole lot. There's nothing I can do about that. They're both connected directly to the computer, and they should be on the same root hub.
Gotcha.
Yeah, well, listen, and I.
It's acceptable at my end. I can understand what you're saying just fine. So why don't we just carry on?
Yeah, the only other option would be to go to the echoey Logitech microphone.
Ah, no.
Okay.
We heard that. I heard that already before the show. Let's not do that.
Okay.
So
all right.
Let's talk about codecs and strategy and what have you discovered in the workshop where you've been working there?
Okay. Well, in terms of being able to deliver content to the mobile devices today, you really only have one choice to get good quality with high efficiency, and it is that high efficiency AHEAAC that we've been an evangelist for ever since about 2002 when we brought it to the internet. As you probably know, for a very, very brief moment in time here, I'll give some brief history. Back in 1998, I started to do some research on the streaming, and the audio codecs were fairly dismal to choose from. There was MP3. You could get some decent fidelity, and I use the term decent fairly loosely, but it required 128 kilobits to do so. And way back then, 128 kilobits was almost non-existent for most people. They're still looking at dial-up, which meant MP3, a lot of MP3 streaming was done down at 32 kilobit, and that's only a couple kilohertz of audio bandwidth, which is pretty wretched. So I began to go codec shopping. Windows Media was no good. The Real Audio codec was no good. So I ran across this company in Germany, Coding Technologies. They were a bunch of Fraunhofer expats that went and did their own thing, and they took the new audio codec to be AAC and put this SBR technology on it, and it became HEAAC, which is the formal name that got accepted under MPEG-4.
Greg, could we pause for a minute and talk about this spectral band replication technology? I'm not sure we've ever explained that adequately on this podcast, and I think it's terrifically interesting. It's amazing that it's not perfect, but it's amazing that it sounds as good as it does. SBR was the first name you mentioned, and now it's termed officially high efficiency. Tell us about SBR.
Yes. Yeah, the SBR, as soon as you start going below 64 kilobits, approximately, as soon as you start going below 64 kilobits, things start to change because now, I mean, all audio codecs are a work of art, if you understand what I mean by that. An audio codec is not something that you can design strictly from a textbook. It's very much like an audio processor. It's the perfect marriage between science and art. It is a discipline that must be managed very closely by both techniques. And if you don't have the right science behind it, if you don't have the right artistic calls behind it, you're going to end up with codecs that sound like Windows Media or, sorry, Microsoft. Sorry, Bill. Or MP3. But in MP3's defense, MP3 came at a time when the technology was such that it had to be weighed up against what kind of processing was available in order to get the task done. By comparison to AAC, it is a less sophisticated algorithm. It has less tools. It analyzes the audio in a much less sophisticated means. Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned, as soon as you go below 64 kilobits, the world changes, and you have to start thinking a little bit differently. The codec becomes even more artistic, and you've got to throw different kinds of tools at this thing because to do an audio transparent codec below 64 kilobits in with today's technology, the way we know things is just simply not going to happen. There are not enough bits. It's not going to happen. So you've got to throw some very interesting new concealment techniques at this whole game. Mm. And one of those concealment techniques is what they call spectral band replication, SBR. And that is the heart of the high efficiency HEAAC or AAC Plus. AAC Plus was actually the brand name for coding technologies codec. It's analogous to Kleenex versus tissue.
Yeah.
So when you hear somebody talk about HEAAC, you can assume it's exactly the same thing as AAC Plus. AAC Plus is sort of an obsolete term at this point. We're sort of jumping around a little bit here, but just to fill everyone in, Dolby has purchased coding technologies. There is no more coding technology. We won't go into the politics as to why Dolby got them, why they purchased them. But Dolby also killed the name AAC Plus. And now the main player with all of this is... now here's a page. The wiki here needs to definitely be updated, and I keep meaning to go in here and update because some of the history here is really not up to date, and I need to fill in the holes. One of the primary things that's not on that page is the fact that we were the first ones. Orban was the first one to license HEAAC for streaming on the internet. I found the technology at a 2002 AES in LA, and I put the headphones on. Oh, excuse me. I'm trying to shake a cold at the same time that doesn't really want to kick in.
Yes, you heard this at AES in 2000.
I lost my train of thought there for
a second. Yeah, AES in 2002, you found this technology from Coding Technologies, where they were adding this SBR onto AAC. But tell us what that means. I'm thinking that they actually end up spending fewer bits on the AAC part and then a few bits on this spectral band replication. But what kind of notes are they taking? How do they figure out, okay, we're not going to actually transport the high frequencies, but we're going to describe the high frequencies. Is that kind of what it's like?
Okay, there you go. That was the diagram. I sent you this diagram earlier off the Orban website. Ours is in color. Yeah, ours is in pretty color. But whatever.
I just forwarded those links over to Burke.
Content is king, so that's fine. That's exactly what the deal is. You start with a really good core codec like AAC, and you take that and the core codec codes the audio to about one half the bit rate. And so you get 6 kilohertz audio, and then you take the clues that you get from the high frequencies, and SBR is a synthesis algorithm. And these clues as to what the high frequencies are supposed to do get tacked on to the 6 kilohertz and above to about 15 kilohertz. And then you end up with this very pleasing coded audio. And as I said, it's not bit perfect by any chance. But as soon as you go below 64K, you have to start making some different artistic decisions. The question is, do you want to settle for all this watery, bubbly, swishy WMA or MP3? Or do you want to settle for the synthesized, pleasing sound of HEAAC? Those are your choices. Neither one of those technologies are bit perfect. Neither one of them are close. But one of them is going to give you the illusion of hi-fi, and the other one is not. And I think you know which one I'm in favor of.
Yeah. So let me see if I got if I'm guessing at this, but I think I'm right. It certainly is easier to code lower frequencies, bass and low mid range. It doesn't take as many bits to get that described because the frequency is so much lower, and we're not bumping up against Nyquist here as in terms of, well, sampling, of course, but it doesn't take as much to describe that, right? And the octaves are wider, so your bands that you're dividing the audio up into are certainly wider. Would I be right about that?
Well, what ends up happening is if you try to code. Let's throw a number at this for a second. Let's throw a realistic number. Let's say you want to code the audio at 32 kilobits.
Okay.
If you try to code 15 kilohertz audio bandwidth, which is what everybody perceives as being hi-fi, it's what all of us are used to listening to FM, and we all admit that. Excuse me. We all admit that FM. It's pretty much, everybody perceives that as hi-fi. It's only 15 kilohertz. But by and large, even though some of us can hear single tones between 15 and 20 kilohertz, the bottom line here is by the time you get that the area between 15 and 20 kilohertz, by the time you get that associated with the other program material from 15 kilohertz and below, there's so much more energy below 15 kilohertz that really masks out any content from 15 kilohertz to 20. So if you were to simply put a sliding low-pass filter on your system and swing that thing between 20 kilohertz and 15 kilohertz, most everyone, even young listeners, are going to be very hard-pressed to hear any difference.
Mm.
It's just not going to happen. But that being said, We target 15 kilohertz because, as I said, everyone can pretty much perceive that as nice fidelity. But if you tried to do that at 32 kilobits, it's just not going to happen. There aren't enough bits to get that job done. So you need something that can dramatically improve the efficiency of this task. So the only way to do that is to chop the audio in half, use a really good core codec like AAC, and then use the synthesis approach, such as SBR, and put that on top of it. And then you can play another trick on top of that, and you can throw parametric stereo at it, And what parametric stereo does, it adds another tool or another trick to the mix of things. And it basically sends the audio in mono, and you put the stereo spatial information in the side chain as well. And then you gain a little bit more efficiency yet that you can throw at the core codec. And then you end up with a really, really good sounding audio codec. And that's where everybody's going at this point. Microsoft Windows 7 is native. The HEAC is native in Windows 7, Windows 8, certainly in both of the Mac platforms, which includes the desktop OS as well as iOS, which is all their mobile devices, and certainly Adobe Flash supports HEAC at this point. And there's really no reason to even consider anything else with maybe the possibility of trying to reach old internet radio appliances, such as the there's a fury of internet radios that do not support HE. They would consist of the Grace, anything with a receiver chipset in it, by the way. Which is really hard to find that information, but I can tell you right now, the Grace, that other company that makes those, I'm drawing a blank here, just trying to think, C-Crane, the other one. Yeah, all of those. Okay, really, if you want a standalone internet radio, the ultimate is an iPod Touch. A lot of people have resisted some of the iPhone products because they don't want to be tied to AT&T for whatever reason. I think it's something people need to get over. You think AT&T is bad? You ought to try Verizon. But that's another religious political debate that we'll save for later. But the ultimate internet radio would probably be an iPod Touch because you can run any multitude of apps on the device. But if you do want something that's not an Apple product, the other ones to look at would be like the Logitech Squeezebox family. They all support HEAAC.
Hey Greg, I wanted to, if we could look at this diagram on the Orban page, about halfway down, they're giving some diagrams of Mushra scores, and I wonder if you could, this compares different codecs, like this one comparing AAC plus V2 and V1 and AAC LC, low complexity, which is what all the iTunes library, I believe, is recorded at. Can you explain what a Mushra score is? I keep reading about this in the various AES documents.
These were tests that were done by the MPEG standards committees, something that Microsoft really came under fire for not participating in. They've, over the years, in my opinion, have suffered from an awful lot of non-invented here syndrome. But be that as it may, That part's now history because everybody seems to be on board with the HEAAC. But the Mushra scores were a standards-based way of doing codec evaluation, where they would get several listeners, and they were presented with a number of different test material, and that's how this got rated. Now, what these things are showing right now, those graphs, is they show the ultra low bit rate performance. Kirk, you mentioned that all the iTunes software, not software, all the iTunes files, they're all up at AAC. They're either up there at 128, most of it's all 256. So that does not qualify for ultra bit rate, and that's not what we were comparing. Although I think that one graph did go up to 128, but you can see that at 128, AAC gets very good very good ratings. You'll see up there at 128, it's real close to the top. Whereas,
yeah, on that graph, at 128, they're all virtually the same. And this graph doesn't even show 256, where, you know, where iTunes material is all at this point, or mostly there. The point there isn't how do these sound at higher bit rates, because, hey, at high bit rates, a lot of these codecs are fairly unimpeachable, especially AAC at, you know, 256 or even higher. But at low bit rates, which, and we have to consider low bit rates for streaming to cell phones and data modems, and as data modems get into cars with 4G LTE technology, I think if we have everybody trying to stream at 256, we're going to run out of bandwidth pretty quickly. So folks are going to be streaming at 24, 32, 48, 56 kilobits per second, and they want an entertainment quality of sound going on, and that's what this AAC Plus, especially V2. Was invented and perfected to help do to give you this to give you an entertainment quality experience at a pretty reasonably low bit rate, almost a dial-up.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is spot on. I mean, despite what AT&T and Verizon and all the rest of them would like you to believe, with their billions of ad campaigns. What's important here is being able to deliver consistent data. And I have to laugh at all these LTE commercials, and AT&T, I mean, you got to love them. They've got all these things where they don't even want to tell you what LTE stands for. And they even have a campaign now where they're even proud of the fact, and they never do mention what it is. And just for the record, LTE stands for long-term evolution. Finally, somebody finally said it.
Okay.
So in any regard, we're getting really good numbers with the LTE. I've got two LTE modems here. One's from Verizon, one's from AT&T. And I have clocked above 20 megabits. That's no joke. 20 megabits from time to time when things are here. I can even show you something. This one's kind of interesting. Let's see here. This one I just did the other day. Where the heck did that go? Right. Let's see. I think it was this one. Yeah, this one... Let's see. I don't know if we can see this.
Yeah, that works fine. Holy cow.
Yeah. Okay. You'll see that that's roughly 13 megabits down and 15 megabits up. And that was through the Wi-Fi on my iPhone through an external wireless modem. On the LTE network. I think that one was Verizon's LTE, if I recall. That was in the middle of the day. But late at night, I've seen the thing do just north of about 20. But the point here is, that's all great. You get 20 megabits, and it's great. But it needs to stay there. And that's what a lot of these guys can't deliver. And that's why it's very, very important on these crowded networks that we use audio codecs that can sound good down at 32 kilobits, because the players, such as our Streams Hi-Fi radio player, we buffer the heck out of the audio so that as these mobile networks come and go with their data, it can stay up and the user's completely unaware that the data has actually stopped from time to time. So that's why it's very, very important to do this.
Craig, we're going to pause for just a moment here and hear a word from our sponsor, and that's Telo Systems. And when we come back, Tom and Chris are going to pose some questions about coding, about the technology, and you're also going to tell us about there are right ways and wrong ways, apparently, to build a decoder. And apparently there's a lot of wrong ones out there. So you're going to tell us about that. Right now, I want to remind you, you're listening to or watching This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Tom Ray and Chris Tobin, and our guest Greg Oganowski on this episode, number 116. And this episode is brought to you by Telos Systems. Telos has been around for almost 30 years, and our founder, Steve Church, is the guy who was the first guy to use a DSP in a broadcast audio product with when he invented the Telos 10. Steve was a talk show host and an engineer as well. And Steve was tired of telephone interviews sounding bad on the radio. So Steve decided he was going to do something about that. Texas Instruments just came out with a DSP chip, and Steve got a sample of one. Well, he decided to take an analog telephone hybrid. You know, a hybrid is what turns the two-wire telephone line into a four-wire system with separate send and receive audio. And that's what broadcasters need to deal with. So he took this DSP chip, wrote some code with a friend of his, and was able to enhance the operation of the old analog hybrid quite well. Now we have Telos telephone hybrids all around the world, tens of thousands of them, maybe close to 100,000 of them on radio stations and talk shows and just all over the place, even in conference rooms and conference centers. The big major talk show hosts around the world are using Telos telephone talk show systems. I want to tell you about the Telos HX series. This is not a whole talk show system. It's just a single hybrid or a dual hybrid. The Telos HX1 and HX2. There you go. If you go to the website, telos-systems.com/HX, you'll see these hybrids. These are the replacements for the venerable Telos 1 and Telos 1 Plus 1. We actually don't make those anymore. These are the replacements. They actually cost less than the originals do, than the Telos 1 and the 1 Plus 1, and they perform better than those did. Now, these hook up to an ordinary POTS, you know, plain old telephone service phone line. And by the way, I was just at a gentleman's home today. He's a new podcaster. He does a podcast about leadership. His name is Michael Hyatt. Maybe you follow him on Twitter. Maybe you'd like to know about him. But Michael Hyatt needed a way to connect telephone lines to his podcasting equipment. It's got a modest setup, but it works great for him. And he was just blown away with the quality that the Telos HX1 provided. So now he's going to be able to do telephone interviews. Hey, they were sounding better than his Skype out connections, and for good reason. There's just a lot of good audio processing and good proper technology to extract the best quality audio from a phone line in the HX1. You'll find these in newsrooms all across America, and all news stations are using these. A lot of podcasters are using them too. So I invite you to check it out on the web at telos-systems.com/HX. Oh, by the way, we didn't have a real by golly telephone line to hook the HX up to. We actually hooked it up to a magic jack. If you're familiar with that, you know, it's phone service for $20 a year. Yeah, you got to provide the internet connection. So, you know, essentially it's an analog terminal adapter with an account with Magic Jack. And it worked great. It sounded fabulous, much better than I expected. So even if you don't have a real by golly telephone line, you can still provide a POTS connection to the Telos HX if you need to do that kind of telephone interviews for your show, your podcast, your radio station, or in your conference center. All right. Thanks to Telos Systems for sponsoring this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. All right, back to the show. Hey, I want to check in with Chris Tobin. Chris, you work for a company now that also makes codecs. I'm sure you're, you know, really getting your arms wrapped around the technology as if you didn't have it already. What question have you got for our guest, Greg Oganowski?
Well, you know, the question I used to get, I get from a lot of folks over the years and even more recently, what would you suggest? And I know you probably have some real good ones. Suggest for processing, or yeah, I guess the best way to put it, processing your studio program feed that you're going to use to deliver to your CDN for an internet delivery of, say, you know, streaming on a PC or maybe a stream or an internet radio, I'll call it. And also, since you have to do different streams for, like, you know, smartphone delivery and whatnot, what would you suggest is a good way to get a roundabout, not roundabout, a rounded audio? You know, just something that's consistent, as you were saying earlier, you know, even though smartphones deliver, you know, high throughput at certain times or bursty moments, you know, how do you do something consistently? I've listened to several streams on various different internet radio boxes, and it's interesting some of the things that you hear. But, you know, what would you suggest is a good round way of just getting in there, making it consistent so that when people experience the station, whether it be on an internet radio on the tabletop in the kitchen, if that, computer, maybe a laptop, and then the nowadays smartphones like an iPhone or an Android phone?
Well, we have a product just for that, as a matter of fact. It's called the Optimod PC. It's the Orbin 1101. Yeah. And Kirk, I didn't send you a link to that, but it's easy enough to find. If you go to www.orban.com and then click on products and then streaming, and then on the left you can see the 1101 over there if you want to pick that up. But basically, yeah, there it is. This card installs in a Windows machine, and it appears as two sound devices. And the reason why it appears as two sound devices is because many of the broadcasters have got commercial insertion requirements and or Arbitron PPM watermarking requirements. So this allows for both technologies to be integrated into the stream. The OptiMod PC should not be taken lightly. It is the same advanced audio signal processing technology that is in our $7,000 Orban 6300, and it's very similar to the HD section of the 8600. So for under $2,000, you get a very, very capable audio signal processor designed for exactly the task you're speaking of. And, you know, what I do all the time with my iPhone, I hate to say this, but I mean, a fact is a fact. I don't even listen to the radio anymore, to tell you guys. And you're probably wondering, oh, my God, you know, you got a guy that's been in radio for this amount of time. It just it's the truth. I mean, I plug my iPhone into my Bose system, into my Chevy Trailblazer, and I can listen to streams from Germany, from Amsterdam, and drive around L.A., and they never fall off. It's just absolutely amazing what you can do. And just to let you know, the OptiMod PC powers all the iHeartRadio streams, for example. We do most of the CBS streams. So that's your answer there.
Oh, excellent. Yes, I've used the OptiMod PC, the PC card. It does work very well. It is very powerful. And you're right. You can go in the right direction or you can go in the wrong direction.
Greg, I wonder if we might be able to jump off in the weeds here a bit more. You sent some links along about normalized audio and zero DBFS and also Windows 7 audio sample rate converter performance. Would you like to talk about either of these issues? And I'll get the link over to Burke so he can bring it up while you're talking about it.
I sent those to you, Kirk. I figured if we had time, we could touch on those. But there's some topics that I'm currently working on right now. For the better part of the summer and fall and winter, I've been working with Microsoft to fix the Windows 7 record sample rate converter because there was a problem that I discovered where somebody didn't get the math right. And lo and behold, we're supposed to have a fix. As a matter of fact, it's due this week. And I noticed that there was a set of updates that came in. I haven't had a chance to check them yet.
What are we looking at here? What are these sweeps of different diagonal lines?
This is basically DC to Nyquist. Yeah. And what you want to see is the ultimate sample rate converter will be nothing but a line. If there's anything else on that picture other than that diagonal line, there's a problem. So the first ones look really good.
Okay.
If you go down to the second one that's shown there on the left, that looks really good, even though there's that little bit of a blip at the top. That's just because of the sample rate change, and it's a little bit of fold over, but that's still okay. But this junk on the right, that is of concern. And if you work through the numbers on it, you'll basically see that it's really, really subpar performance. If you scroll over to the back up. Yeah, all that extra webbing in there. That's all Spectro junk. And if you move over to the right a little bit more, scroll over to the right just a little bit. Yeah, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Go to where the white space is. Back up. Yeah, right in there. Now scroll down. scroll down, and there will be some Spectrum photos that should show up. Okay, here we go.
There. Okay, there we go.
Now, this is what a lot of radio people would be used to seeing. This is shown in a different domain, and you can see what a mess this is. I mean, ideally, there should be no garbage on either side of the fundamental.
That's a single tone, correct?
Yeah, the original is single tone. So this is the result of bad sample rate conversion.
Yeah, this is the result of the Windows 7 record sample rate converter. And then if you, I've got the, they had sent me fixed software fairly early on, and it's all tested and posted in there. You guys can go to that link. It's at www.indexcom.com/tech. And then if you just click on the appropriate thing at that lovely little page, they're sort of like some closed circuit projects that I have up that I'm continually adding topics there. Okay, moving right along. Then there's another thing that comes up, and it's 0 dBFS accumulation, 0 dBFS plus. And this is another little problem that many don't understand. What can happen with 0 dBFS plus? If we could go down to the first graph on that page, scroll down a little bit.
So this looks like a simple sine wave, right?
Okay, now here is the ultimate problem frequency. It's 1/4 the sample rate, in this case 11025 kilohertz. And what happens here, if you construct this, you'll see the blue dots are the sample points. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take this waveform and normalize it to 1, absolutely nothing will happen because it's already at 1.
Yeah.
Now, if we go down, scroll down to the next, right there. Okay. Now, there's nothing that says that waveform needed to start at 0 degrees.
Right.
And if
we
simply skew it by 45 degrees, you will see exactly the same 11025 kilohertz get created, and it reconstructs to exactly the same 11025 kilohertz. But the problem here is, if that waveform gets normalized, the blue dots are now going to turn out to where the yellow dots are.
Yes. Yeah.
So now what's going to happen is the reconstruction filter in the DAC is going to want to reproduce this at 3 dB above zero.
Yes, I see. That's where the red dots are. The DAC doesn't know that it's not supposed to do that.
If the DAC is unaware of this, you've got a big problem.
Yeah.
And if you scroll down further, here's proof of all of this. Keep going. Okay, that's the fundamental. That's what everything should look like.
Right.
Okay, that's what it looks like. That's the 45 degree version. Looks good. Now let's normalize the 45 degree version, and that's what it looks like coming out of one of these.
Does this mean we shouldn't normalize anything? What is this? What is the first implication?
What it means is that if you've processed the audio with a limiter that is not oversampled and is unaware of the reconstruction details, you're going to be in trouble. And Bob Orban and Frank Foti wrote a paper a couple of years ago about what happens to my CD when it goes on the radio. I'm getting ready to publish another paper. It's going to be called "What Really Happens to My CD When It Gets Put on the Radio?" Because this phenomena was not covered in that paper. And we've got a very interesting plot here. And this is going to be the first time the world has ever seen this. Kirk, could you click on that link that has that ping in it?
I'm not sure what you mean. Sorry.
There was a link that I sent you a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Do you see it?
Actually, yeah. Let me.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first time the world has seen this. This is basically the imperfect world of 1X digital audio. And what this shows is The worst case you'll see is 3 dB. And basically everything above the floor, if you picture the black, if you picture the black of the surface, that is 0 dBFS.
So everything below the black is probably good audio, but this is stuff that's created by using, when you say 1x digital audio, you mean that we're not super oversampling when we we do things to the digital audio.
Correct. And it should be stressed here. What I mean by the oversampling, because there's an entire community that says everything should just be oversampled and because it sounds better. Well, it's really not that simple.
Never.
If you're simply converting from the analog domain and then digitizing and then coming back out, there's absolutely no reason in the world why you can't do your digital audio at 1x. Where the problem comes to be is when you enter signal processing into this mix. You've got a digital audio workstation that may have a bunch of 1x limiters in it. It may have a bunch of 1x tools in it. These things can really get you into a lot of trouble. And I've got a lot more things that I'll be adding onto that site regarding the 0 dBFS. We're going to add what we call some slot noise tests, where we're going to take some audio and we're going to kill the 1 kilohertz to 3 kilohertz area. And what you end up with at that point is the spectrum that has absolutely no content between 1 kilohertz and 3 kilohertz. And if you pass that through the perfect bit perfect system, then you will see that the audio always remains uncontaminated. And if you pass that through any of these other systems, you will see the spectrum will just build up and up and up and up until everything gets just really crummy. And it's very indicative of what happens to people that are improperly processing their audio to get mastered to CD, which sort of leads me to the root of why I bring this up. Both Orban and Omnia are taxed today with having to put all of these horribly produced CDs on the radio or on net streams and be able to make them sound good. But the problem has been that these things have been so grossly overprocessed before they even see the input terminals of either an Optimod or an Omnia that they're almost irreparable.
Yeah, I remember. Would that come primarily from just the processing, Greg, or that's used on the CD, or is that more with the sample rate, or is it a combination of the above, or
it's a combination. It's a combination of both. Yes,
Greg, as I recall, certain Omnia processes, and I believe Orban too. Now they're doing a lot of things to the audio, but both have really highly oversampled systems in them. I think you're referring here to some of the software tools that folks are using on workstations, where they do some processing to an audio file and end up with something that, okay, to the ear may sound okay, but boy, really, it's got a lot of crap in it. And when you go to process that with a finishing processor and an on-air processor, you really bring all that stuff up, don't you?
That is correct, Kirk, and that is exactly my point. And just to go back just a couple seconds ago, you are correct in that both Orban and Omnia, we both grossly oversample our processing. So this phenomena does not happen in either of the processors. This is something that has happened at the production level, and a lot of people wonder why some of their iTunes files don't sound very good. But you know, those guys, they're playing a different game today. They want their files to be loud on their iPods. And this has got nothing to do with a radio or a net stream. So they're fighting the same problem that we have fought in the broadcast business for years, wanting to be louder than your competition. They're now fighting it within their content. And it makes it a real problem for those of us that need to put these on live net streams. So, you know, I know that that Omnia is looking at some specialized pre-processing to address this, as are we. There's things that you can do in the production studio to clean this stuff up, although it requires some training, and it requires the right tools, most certainly. Now would be a good time for me to bring up another little thing. You know, there's an entire industry out there of these products that are these USB DACs.
Yeah.
A lot of it's showing up in the home theater community, and everybody's running around saying, "Oh, well, this DAC sounds better than that DAC." Yada yada yada. Well, I just started to get some of these DACs in here to test. And I am just really dying to find out if there's any correlation between the fact that some of these can actually handle the 0 dBFS plus phenomena and some cannot. I just really want to find out if there's anything to this, because we all know that the crackpot audiophile community can sometimes get out of control. And, you know, just because... this wire is blue right here, this one might sound better than the one right here that's black. This one clearly doesn't sound as good as this one. Can you hear the difference?
Is one oxygen free?
Don't get me started.
So, golly, what, I had a question about this. In all this talk about audio quality in these in digital systems, some of which are consumer and some of which are reputedly professional, and in this 1X paper that you've got this treatise on what's going on that you've got on your website indexcom.com/tech, you can choose it from there. It's interesting how with digital audio we thought we were getting into a place with some super good quality, and yet there's really some ways to mess this up, and some people, some companies, some software designers, some hardware designers are doing exactly that. They're messing it up pretty badly. We've only got three or four more minutes left in the show. Greg, do you want to hit real quickly on this notion about improper decoding of these algorithms?
Yeah.
And we don't want to turn people off to what can be really good audio. So let me hit Burke here with this link, and he can show it while you're talking about it in just the few minutes that we have left. Burke, there's your link.
It'll be the Streaming Audio Basics link, and we can scroll down through the terse text there and start with the green spectrum, the very first green spectrum. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, scroll on down, and zoom in on the first spectrum picture that's got green.
Right there. There we go. Yeah, zoom in on that if you could. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. Okay, the green area is what we as humans consider to be hi-fi. That is 15 kilohertz. Okay, and the actual data that's in there, it's just a noise file. But 15 kilohertz of it is what you need. Now, if you scroll down to the next one,
mm-hmm. Decoder.
That is a proper decoder that's decoding HEAC V2 at 32 kilobits, and it's giving you, as you can see, 16 kilohertz audio bandwidth. And that gets the coding correct. You know, if you scroll down a little bit further,
I want to point out something that just because the spectrum looks good doesn't mean the audio sounds good. Although we already agree that the audio does sound pretty reasonable. It's 32 kilobits per second, HEAC. I just want to point out that just because the spectrum looks like this doesn't mean it sounds good. But if the spectrum doesn't looks bad, like what we're about to see, it's going to sound bad.
That is correct, and that's a very good point, which I actually cover in all of that terse text that was just above those graphs. Anyone wishing to look at that can certainly get the explanation of it, but we don't need to go there right now. But it's an extremely, extremely important fact that when you're assessing this stuff, the first place to start is what the spectrums look like, because if they do look bad, they're going to sound bad.
Right.
But case in point, if you had a 15 kilohertz 128 kilobit MP3 by comparison to AAC, if you have sensitive ears to any kind of phasing or swishiness, you're going to hear that in MP3 versus the AAC. Yet, both spectrums are going to look very, very good and very competent.
So what's the next spectrum that has a big valley?
Unlike what we're going to see here right now.
Yeah, what's this big ditch?
Okay, this is somebody that didn't get the sample rates correct, and it's decoding. This one was, this is only MP3. For whatever reason, they've decided to, the CBS radio app, they still have MP3 streams. Apparently, they haven't gotten the word out yet. This is what the spectrum looks like coming out of the CBS iPhone player.
Now this is not the iPhone player's fault. This is the sample rate, not the bit rate, but the sample rate on the encoder.
Okay.
So they're sampling too slowly. Therefore, Nyquist is too low. Therefore, they got this big hole above this big nothing above 8 kilohertz. And then what is that? Just noise and crap above about 14.5 kilohertz.
Yeah, if you look at it real close, you'll see that it's actually a mirror image of it. It's flipped over because the iPhone does not have an anti-image filter due to cost and battery constraints, which is perfectly acceptable. But if you sent it the right coded audio, it wouldn't matter that it doesn't have that. As you can see by the Streams app, that is all encoded and decoded correctly. Now here, if you go down to the next slide, you'll see there, the next plot, you'll see that they attempted to get it fixed, but they're not decoding the HEAAC correctly for reasons. I'm not exactly sure how they got this wrong, but it's obviously not right. It's only 10 kilohertz audio, and then there's a great big hole on there, and then it mirror images back around again.
You know, I think there's some instruments and typical bands that play between 10 and 12 kilohertz that I don't care for much anyway. So this might not be that bad.
you know, hey, what's a couple kilohertz among friends?
Right. Okay. All right. So we're not sure what made that happen. It's not mathematically relatable to stuff that we're instantly talking about here, is it?
No, it looks like it's at the wrong sample rate for whatever reason. I'm not sure why what happened there.
Okay, let's look at the next plot. We'll beat up on Clear Channel here for a moment.
Yeah, this one this is the iHeart Radio Streams. They only top out at 64K. I'm sorry, at 12 kilohertz, but it costs them 64K to deliver that because they're only delivering them as AAC only. And I think the reason that this happened was because the app developer that they chose didn't know how to deal with HEAAC. So this is what they have. And once again, who wants to listen to this?
Well, it's not horrible, but it does stop at 12
right.
kilohertz.
It's not horrible, but I mean, you know, these are people that are trying to set the standards on all of this. And we brought the technology. I mean, you know, I feel personally offended. I brought this technology to everybody to have and to hold and to enjoy. And, you know, as the father of this child, you know, these IT guys and computer programmers that don't seem to understand digital audio that are playing in this field, as far as I'm concerned, they should all go home and get involved in a different line of work.
So scrolling farther down here, we have the Peak Radio app from Liquid Compass. Let's see. What's wrong with this one? It's not horrible, is it? Oh, it's mono. It's not stereo.
That one looks good. Yeah, some of these, although that one, that thing is mono for whatever reason.
Yeah, okay.
So what that means is it wasn't decoding parametric stereo correctly.
All right, let's look at this next one. It lops off at what? 6.5 kilohertz. Woo!
Yeah.
Wow.
And, of course, it's mono.
Well, it's on an iPhone, so do you need more than 6.5 kilohertz? It's a phone, right?
If you plug it into your into a big system, you certainly do.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we? You've got more of these to look at. I'm not sure we have time in the show for the rest of these.
Yeah, but no. This pretty much spells it out. I mean, they've all got similar issues. There's only there are only so many ways to get this wrong, but the whole collection is here. I just really wish developers would get their stuff together. The bottom one. With the colors there, that just shows how beautiful the that's various single tones through the iPhone sound subsystem. And you can see the thing has a very nice flat frequency response. It's a beautiful
music player. Oh, you iPhone fanboy, look at this.
Yeah, it's a beautiful music player. Those are all separate tones that were run separately. It's not spectrum contamination.
Right, not spectrum contamination. Yeah, those are supposed to be there.
They're just all separate tones that were run to show the frequency response.
Now, the products that are there, they're down very, very low, like under 98 dB or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah. That's why I say it's a beautiful music player. They did a great job on it. It's too bad the DAC can't handle 0 dBFS, but, hey, you can't have everything.
Okay. Well, and just to be clear, those aren't spurs. Those are tones that look essentially like they coming out like they did going in. Pretty close.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
This is not going through a codec, is it? This is just through the iPhone's
those weren't through a codec. That was just PCM through the phone.
Okay, all right. We're gonna have to draw this show to a close. Greg, tell us quickly about your Streams player. I've got it. Enjoy it. Sounds good. What's good about it?
Streams Hi-Fi Radio. We now support the Pioneer App Radio, which is a third party. Aftermarket car radio, so you can now plug your iPhone into the app radio, and then you can control it on the dashboard. And there's a view of it right there, and it's a beautiful thing. And Streams is coming to a dashboard near you, and we're working on a couple of other implementations, a couple other providers. We're talking to several of the automotive makers, and the one thing about the Streams player is we're aiming to be one player for everyone. We only list in the comprehensive Streams directory that's in there. We've got about 5,000 HEAAC streams. We do not list MP3. It's geared towards reliability, entertainment grade quality, and giving the user experience. Something very easy to deal with, and I can show you just very quickly. This is going to be a little difficult to do, but there's the Streams directory, and you simply click on, let's go here. Here we go. WIXY. Okay, and it's a little hard to see because of the glare. Yeah, I can't kill the glare, but it's got album art. Everything's standards based. To get in the directory, you simply go to our website and ask to be listed if you're not already listed. There's nothing proprietary about it. The one thing that we aim is that this is really about the listener. And I think a lot of content providers need to understand this today. It's about the listener. It's not about the content provider. Yes, we as broadcasters are here to make money. There's no question about that. We have to stay alive. We have to be able to fund the content delivery. So, of course, there's a business there. But if you give the user something that the users want to come back for, then the content provider gets to take care of themselves. And what Streams aims to be is like an AM and an FM radio, whereby you can hear all AM stations on an AM radio. You can hear, the AM radio. Yeah. You can hear all AM stations over there on this thing. You can hear FM stations on an FM radio. And you should be able to hear all IP radio stations on one player, not having to download this player for that station, this player for that station, and then before you know it, you've got 50 players taking up all this room, and then the daunting task of remembering which app plays what station.
Yeah.
Now, hold on just a moment, but everybody who's in charge of that concept, have you actually given this any thought? Obviously not.
Yeah, I know. I've
so
got
with
a,
that,
has nothing to do with the content.
I think we may have brought our program to the end of our broadcast day.
We may have. Greg, I want to thank you for being our guest here. And as usual, you've got a lot to say, a lot of great technical work, too, at your website. And if you want to see that, folks, indexcom.com. You want to see, you want to dive deep into the stuff that Greg was talking about in the show, it's indexcom.com/tech. There's a few generic looking links there, but they're to things like his Zero DBFS Plus, which on its face doesn't make any sense, but you'll see what he's talking about. The AAC article and the Windows Audio SRC article as well. Hey, I got to pass it around real quick. Chris Tobin, you have any last comments or questions for Greg before we got to skittle out of here?
No, questions that would just prolong our exit. But I will say that I totally agree with Greg about the single-player platform. And oddly enough, for many years, a friend of mine and I have talked about this and have been befuddled by the content providers, I'll call them. You can call them broadcasters if you like. And how nobody wants to go in the direction of just a common platform and just say, okay, just pick and choose and run with it. And I was told on many occasions by executives with far greater intelligence than I that you understand it has nothing to do with the content. It has to do with the advertiser's needs. And this is why we have to have different platforms. And it's more distribution and we can do more with it. And so far, I would agree with you, Greg, that nothing really has come of it except for more overburdened abilities to distribute content that in some cases is excellent, but just getting lost in the mix, and others that just, well, like you said, IT programmers shouldn't be allowed to get away with murder as they are, and broadcasters are not doing anything to rein them in. So I'm not sure what's going to be the future, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of this stuff falls under the category. I'll try to wrap this up real quick. Just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. And one of the other things to,
exactly.
to really, yeah, one of the things to remember here is that even though the way we can deliver content today is changing, and that's probably a good thing. I'm all for change. I don't have a problem with that. There is one thing about all this that has not changed. And content providers need to think very, very long and hard about this. It was actually not really long and hard about it at all when you get right down to it. Because the fact remains, the way radio is consumed today, that part has not changed. Yes, it may not be on an AM radio. It may not be on an FM radio. It may very well be on a mobile device. But the fact is, radio is always consumed while doing something else. My point is banner ads. Now, even though the Streams Hi-Fi app has the ability to show ads in the display, you know where this device is most of the time when people are listening to it? It's in your pocket. So go ahead, ask yourself, how much of a service are you doing your clients when you're selling them something that people don't even see? I think people need to really remember that for 75 years, the ad model for radio has been oral. And the sooner that streaming audio goes back to that model, the more profitable that's going to be all the way around. So many times I've heard people tell me in these radio stations, well, we can't sell the internet. We can't sell the internet. You know what? Try harder. You know,
absolutely.
You got the world. You got the world at your hands here. Everybody in the world drinks Coke. They drink Pepsi. They all wash their hair with the same products. They all brush their teeth with the same products. You know, it's the same but different. And that's where the money is. And that's what we need to exploit. We don't need to exploit banner ads and start trying to sell things that don't work.
And I would agree. I've got a someone who does some streaming, and I've always questioned why the company, when it comes commercial time, why the company puts up a video ad. It's like, if you're sitting at your desk and you're listening to this station and you're doing something and you're, you know, you're listening to it and you're working on a Microsoft Word document, you're certainly not looking at that player.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. And you know,
I cannot agree with you more. I mean, you know, people are at work to do their job.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
Oh, my.
Well, I will say, yeah, oh my. I will say that I worked with a programmer who, for a spoken word format, I'll call it, because that's the buzz phrase these days, for over 10 years had a very successful run, number one station for all news. And when we started streaming and introducing commercials into the audio stream, we actually mimicked the experience of the radio feed. So if you had an AM tuner, you'd hear the audio and the commercials as they normally would be. The stream followed same suit, but the commercials were tailored for internet. We did not go crazy with banner ads. We did not go crazy with anything else. And it was the most successful application and experience you could have. It was as if you were listening to the radio, but it was actually on your phone or computer, and people actually said that. Then later on, someone decided, no, you got it all wrong. This is not the way to do it. And we're going to go in the direction of what they do now. And I kid you not, the feedback couldn't be more loud, and tar and feathering, if it was legal or possible, people would have done it. And to this day, and you're right, Greg, everyone is like, just because you can do it, they do it. And it's like, no, that's not the way to look at things. And it's just amazing. And the few stations I've heard traveling around the country that do it right by keeping it oral, even though it's a visual medium on some level, seem to be more successful, or I would say the true radio experience on the internet delivery.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more with that. I mean, as far as the visual end of it all goes, you know, the album art is nice. I think the only way people would prone to pull the device out of their pocket or reach for it is if they heard a song, for example, that they wanted to buy. It's nice to be able to have that all that information. And in the Streams app, for example, you make a couple of clicks, and you can save the thing to go buy it later, or you can just buy it right there on the spot.
You know, half the time, the audio track that's on the video cut that's playing just doesn't make any sense unless you're looking at the video. It's especially if it's a completely instrumental track. It's like, why am I listening to this? It just doesn't make any sense. And you know, there's no thought. There's no thought to it. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, are we missing Kirk again?
Hello.
I don't know.
Oh, there he is.
It's time to wrap up.
We'll be right back right after station identification.
Unfortunately, we don't have any audio from Kirk. So
this has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System. Or, this program has been brought to you in living color.
And now Kirk is the one who's there in color. So, since Kirk apparently can't talk to us, is your mic muted, Kirk?
No, my mic's not muted.
Oh, no, there you go. Now we can hear you.
That sounds like the laptop.
Well, yeah, but that's the mic up here. Let's try
back to the other mic. How's that?
There we go. Audio? Much better.
Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
Back. We're good.
Testing. Hello, London. London?
You're good.
Yep. All right. Everything's under control now.
London calling.
This show sure is interesting. Great content and plenty of technical problems. And they all seem to center around this software called SKYPE. All right.
Now, well, guys. MICRO.
Yeah. Technical difficulties beyond our control. Please
can't
stand
get the audio encoding right in their driver.
Tom Ray, thank you for being with us too. I appreciate it. I already said thanks to Chris and to Greg, although you didn't hear me, but I heard it.
That's what matters.
That's what counts.
That's right.
There you go.
I know it was right. Hey, we're going to go, and our show is brought to you by Telos, my employer, telos-systems.com, and check out the HX series of telephone hybrids at Telos. We've enjoyed it. We're going to do a quick giveaway, though. I need a number. Greg Oganowski, if you can hear me, I need a random number between 1 and 38. Can you provide such?
Oh, how about lucky 7?
All right, give me a second. 1. Luckily, it was a low number, not, you know, 36. Okay. 7, huh? Software license to do audio processing and streaming And congratulations to Sean Stapleton. His name is his Twitter handle, at Sean Stapleton, from, QLD, Queensland, Australia. All right, Sean, congratulations. Why don't you be in touch with me? Send me a little tweet or a direct message, and let me click the follow on you. All right, I'm following you, Sean Stapleton, so you can connect to me and give me your contact information. We'll get you the information right out. Congratulations again, Sean Stapleton, winner of an Omnia AXE. Sean won that by retweeting my tweet at the beginning of this show, actually about an hour before the show started, letting you know that Greg Oganowski would be our guest. So we get bigger audience by doing that. We get a lot of retweets, and I sure appreciate that very much. And again, congratulations to Sean. Well, next week, we'll be back with another exciting episode of This Week in Radio Tech. We'll see you next week, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.